I like sports. I could do something in sports.
Uh-huh. In what capacity?
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
So what about that?
Well, you know, they tend to give those jobs to ex-players and people that are, you know, in broadcasting.
Living George Costanza's dream, you're tuned into The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Well, that's really not fair.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
The moon is rising. Oh, the hunger's burning like a flame. No use in hiding. Oh, you're never gonna find escape. Don't look us right in the face. It's like staring at a burning sun. Got teeth like razor blades. And you know that we're out for blood. We're out for blood. Better run, better run. 'Cause here it comes, here it comes. Better run, better run. When the wolves come out to play.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. We got lots of people in the studio. I'm getting a bit of an echo again, no? No, we're good. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's my headset. I don't know.
A little bit. I'm just surprised that I'm hearing out of both ears now.
Hey, there you go. We got a little bit fixed there anyway in terms of what's going on. But we have a guest in, a young gentleman by the name of Skippy joining us today.
I fill out a lot of people in the room, don't I?
You're welcome to join us anytime you want, mm-hmm. Skippy. You know that. We saw you sitting out there and we thought, you know, let's bring Skippy in. He's got lots of good ideas, lots of good comments, lots of stuff to
add. I'm just the everyman.
That's okay. Yeah. We like that. Tonight's song, if you were listening, is a collaboration between a few people, actually. So we started with Wolves by Sam Tinnes. For those that are wondering, Silverberg, and it was remixed by DJ Kays, in terms of the version that you heard. Tinnes is an American singer-songwriter based in Nashville, whose music might be better known if you're a Spotify user, where he averages some 2.1 million hits per month.
Mm-hmm. His music is really big, particularly in like sports montage and like video game stuff, where it's like it's used all over like TikTok and YouTube and stuff like that.
You are correct. His music has been featured on a pile of TV shows, including Charmed, Batwoman, American Ninja Warrior, So You Think You Can Dance, Riverdale, and Quantico, among the various many that he's got to his name. And the song that you heard, Wolves, was used in a commercial for Apex Legends, a video game. Mm-hmm. So there you go. The reason that we're playing tonight, a little closer to home, actually, Winnipeg Goldeyes fans will recognize that song as the Goldeyes hype video, or hype song, along with the video for 2024 they show on the new video board.
Nice.
So there we go. Just wanted to get that in there as we promote a little hometown sporting events. Mm-hmm. Let's get that going because we got no hockey to cheer for a while.
Hey, we got the Goldeyes and the Sea Bears.
That's true. Sea Bears coming out as well.
They're full. I think I've seen. Wow, they're bringing them out.
Sea Bears are a big ticket right now.
And they set another record for the CEBL in terms of attendance.
Yeah. I think they're putting them, you know, a franchise in Winnipeg obviously was a no-brainer just based on location. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't know if they ever thought there would be this kind of response based upon the fact that, you know, the Thunder that was here before that mm-hmm. didn't get that kind of support.
Yeah, the city
they
is
did
so
get
different.
Support. They had just yeah. waned.
Right.
And then
yeah.
sometimes that's where it is. How do you keep it from waning?
Right.
Sometimes
mm-hmm.
you have to win.
And that's the thing. Like they do win. So
yeah. And then there's a conversation that was had when Valor FC was brought in. It's like, okay, well, the face and demographics of Winnipeg is changing, and it's reflecting a different, you know, a different consumer base. And now you've got particularly a very large Filipino community who love basketball. So it's not surprising that yeah. they've taken to it with like yeah. an unbelievable fervor.
Well, it's good to see them getting full houses, and certainly, you know, good to see Goldeyes back. So lots to do this summer if you're hanging around the city. But speaking of hanging around the city, we have a new coach here in Winnipeg. Scott Arneil takes over behind the bench for the Winnipeg Jets. A lot of people believe this was the right hire based on Arneil being named the associate coach a few years ago. But I'm not sure this was the best hire. And let me be clear, mm-hmm. there is a major difference between right hire and best hire.
Mm-hmm.
The 61-year-old Arneil starting his coaching career in 95 with the IHL's Houston Arrows before joining the Manitoba Moose. Hey, look at that. He already was here once. In 1999, 3 years later, he was in Buffalo for his first NHL coaching job as an assistant with the Sabres. He came back to the Moose after four seasons with Buffalo, was named the club's head coach after being hired by Vancouver. In 08-09, led them to their best regular season record and a berth in the Calder Cup Finals, earning them the Louis A.R. Pierre Memorial Award as Coach of the Year in the AHL. Arneil and Claude Noel, a name that we hearkening back to the original days, actually switched positions, not by their own doing, but Arneil took the head coaching position in Columbus after Noel was fired, and Noel was hired here to coach the Jets. So, kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. He was fired a season and a half later, though. Arneil was fired a season and a half later by Columbus. 2012, Vancouver hired him to run the Chicago Wolves. 2013, he joined Alain Vigneault as an assistant coach with the Rangers before being dismissed in 2018, only to be hired as an assistant coach with the Washington Capitals. The Jets lured him away by giving him the associate coach role under Rick Bowness 2 seasons ago, and he was named the new head coach of the Jets 6 days ago. In 123 games with Columbus, his coaching record stands at 45-60-18. As an AHL head coach, considerably better, 218-136-42 record. Is Scott Arneil the right fit here? Do you like that hire?
I think it's more of a, I don't hate that hire.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, I don't think it was.
I think the issue is that Jets fans just, as soon as we found out, well, that one, for one, but the moment we knew that Rick Bowness wasn't coming back, everyone just knew, well, it's going to be Scott Arneil. The Jets aren't even going to go out and talk to anybody. But they did.
At least they say they did.
They say they did.
Well, yeah, but talking is not
It feels like they kind of just did it to do it, so it didn't look like they just handed the job to Scott Arneil, and there's actually a process going on.
I guess I've got a little bit more of an optimistic...
maybe a little bit more.
Well, they said they did. Maybe they did.
I'm trying to be optimistic and say, you know, he's had success here in Winnipeg. Obviously, the Jets brass sees something in him. He understands the players. He's going to be continuing on the system that was brought in by Rick Bowness in the 2 years that he was here. I just feel that it is such a Winnipeg Jets move in the fact that it's a Manitoba Moose level move, where it's just like, we're picking the guy that played here as a player and coached here in the minors, and he's been around, he lives in Winnipeg, so he's going to be fine living in Winnipeg, and they're not going to say, we have one of 32 jobs in the best hockey league in the world, we should have... people lining up outside the door to get one of these 32 jobs.
I mean, I don't like it. And again, I'm not saying Scott Arneil is a bad choice. I don't think that Scott Arneil will do anything wrong in terms of, you know, like completely blowing up the team. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be more of the same.
But my question is, how does it change now? Because if you have the same guy, if you have Rick Bowness light in behind the bench now, are we going to see anything different other than a five-game first-round playoff exit again?
It's what we saw with when Dave Lowry took over after Paul Maurice left. He was just Paul Maurice light. He did the exact same things, had the exact same systems, didn't try anything, didn't change anything. Like, I would expect, you know, you bring in somebody like a Craig Berube, who we'll talk about earlier, Jay Woodcroft. Why is Jay Woodcroft still sitting on the sidelines without an NHL job after all of this time and the success that he had in Edmonton, turning that team around?
Yeah.
The only thing that fell apart for him was the fact that he got no goaltending at the start of the year, and he was trying to institute a new defensive system that just didn't work for the team. Like...
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I think Jay Woodcroft would have been. But again, this is the thing, though. It's the risk reward, right? Like, if you're not willing to go out to venture outside your comfort zone, you're never going to change what's happening here.
Yeah.
And legitimately, Arneil was the most comfortable choice you could have made in that we know him, we know what he brings to the table, we don't have to really worry about
it. We know he's willing to live and work in Winnipeg.
Right. Like, this is the easiest thing we can do.
Yeah. And that's the unfortunate thing for me.
But. Is he going to be a Bowness 2.0? I don't think so. I think he'll bring in something a little different, and maybe that's where they want to go. Is like, we like, you know, we like what we saw, but we want to, you know, switch a little left and instead of a little bit of right.
I don't mind if you want to be regular season Jets successful, but if you're not going to be playoff Jets successful, don't talk to me.
Yeah.
And that's not to be rude. That's to be, if you're going to take Sheldon Keefe's route, that's the same thing that happened in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
You can be as successful as you want in the regular season, but if you don't get playoff success, why are you here?
And I'm
And I'm not saying that Scott O'Neill won't find it. I'm just saying that he's got a tall task ahead of him.
How long did he sign? A 3-year?
I believe so, yeah. I think so.
So it's like, if he doesn't make it in the first year,
you give him the second, and then maybe...
Or do you just give up on the first pay him out?
Again, assuming there will be changes, and I'm not saying there won't be changes. There will be changes to the roster this season, and I certainly think that depending on which way they go... Depending on which way they go, there's going to be movement one way or the other. I think he gets a little bit of string to sort of, you know, dangle on and figure things out with. But at some point, though, you got to go, all right, like, we're a cap team. Like, we don't have a lot of space to play with. You got to make this work with what we got.
And that's something that I did like from his press conference, was that he acknowledged the fact that you need to bring in the young guys, and they need to step up and step into important roles, because this is a salary cap era. The Jets have shown that they are willing to pay to spend the salary cap. So you need to bring in those guys to fill in those roles and get all the bang for your buck that you need, which is something that, going all the way back to the Claude Noel days, never seemed like something that the Jets were open to, is letting the young guys, unless their name was Patrick Laine or Jacob Trouba, who came in a little bit early, they weren't willing to let the young guys just jump right in and take a big role. So I'm optimistic about that side of it. And I'm also optimistic from his perspective on analytics, where it feels like, for basically going all the way, again, back to the start, this team has never believed in analytics or used them properly, because all of the analytics would tell you what the deficiencies are with this team, and they never addressed them. But Arneil said, it's good to look at that from what you're doing right or wrong, but also what other teams are doing and what you can learn from them.
Yeah.
And that feels like something that Rick Bowness and particularly Paul Maurice were not willing to do, was look around the league and see what other coaches are doing and other teams are doing and try and learn something from them and change the things that you're doing.
Skip, last thought?
Yeah, I'm still... Give him a chance.
Yeah,
I didn't hate it, but it's like, would I have liked a change? Yeah. Like you said earlier, oh, Arneil took over for Noel. Noel took over for, it's like, yeah, well, where's somebody from the outside?
Right.
When's some fresh blood going to come in? You know, but where is that going to come from, and who's going to be the first one? Were the Jets really going to be the first one to do that? I didn't think so.
No, but I mean, at the end of the day, though, I mean, you kind of hope that was going to happen. But I mean, again, I agree with you. Give Scott O'Neill a chance to see what he brings to the table, because, I mean, again, he's not going anywhere for 3 years now, so see what happens. Sheldon Keefe wasn't out of the NHL for long. He did receive a call while out to lunch with his wife from the New Jersey Devils on the day he was fired by the Maple Leafs.
So before he recorded that video from the void that he put out there when he was on the boat.
Days later, Sheldon Keefe is the new head coach of those New Jersey Devils. For a guy who went 212-97-40 behind an NHL bench, though, it almost seems like the problem wasn't coaching. Again, I'm not Brendan Shanahan, but what do I know?
Because
if you're winning basically three out of every five games, that's a pretty good winning percentage in the NHL at .600.
Yeah. He can't change the fact that Mitch Marner does not play playoff hockey and is not willing to muck and grind and play the way you need to play in the playoffs. It's not his fault that Austin Matthews just disappears as soon as the calendar turns to April, and John Tavares was signed to a ridiculously long contract that he should not have been signed to. And they're probably going to lose their one good playoff performer in William Nylander because of it.
Well, we'll have to see. But no movement clause kicks in a couple weeks. So
it may not have been his fault, same time, it maybe was. That's why they brought in Berube to kick some A, as they say.
I would agree with that. The great thing about Berube is that there's the chance for him to now reset the culture, because...
Really?
I think Sheldon Keefe...
Really? Because who did Berube have that led that team? And he doesn't play there anymore.
Well, we had Alex Pietrangelo, who was a psychopath.
Ryan O'Reilly, had Pietrangelo. He had some guys that legitimately were nails tough in St. Louis. And that's the big difference. I look at this Toronto team and I go, They have nobody like that. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that's nails tough on this Toronto team. It's legitimately a bunch of guys made out of Jello, and they
except for Reeves, maybe. But he's again, also like you know.
Reeves was brought in for the chuckles, not for being a monster. Well, that's where you want like a fireball, like a Tyler Bertuzzi or a Max Domi, guys that actually.
Who you can't afford to sign.
Yeah, that's the issue now. But I think it's very clear that basically Sheldon Keefe was sold down the river by the management.
Yeah,
and the media.
And it was as it still is, a culture problem in Toronto. It's not a coaching problem, and he just didn't have the voice in order to change that.
Okay, we got a ton of stuff to go through, so
one quick last moment about that.
I was going to say, yeah, go ahead.
Mike Yeo left Vancouver, and the rumor is, well, him and Berube in St. Louis, we might be going to Toronto.
Well,
I don't know if that's...
He apparently interviewed in Ottawa today, so Mike Yeo did, so we'll have to see about that, but... Keith's replacement in Toronto is Craig Berube, as you mentioned, Jason. The former Stanley Cup winning coach tries to take over and push the Leafs to new heights. Again, 281, 190, 72 as a head coach. Nowhere near as close to what Keith put up, but he does have that shiny 2018 Stanley Cup ring. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's the jewelry, but I don't know if Craig Berube... Again, I don't know if Craig Berube will be able to kick enough butts in Toronto to change their fortunes. Because, again, you're talking about five technically really high priced players and then a bunch of minimum wage guys.
Yeah, it's the same problem that Sheldon Keefe had. He got sold down the river by management. Sheldon Keefe is going to go to a really good team in New Jersey, and do not be surprised if they are back in the playoffs next year and they rip it up, because they're going to, like Sheldon Keefe told the Leafs during that documentary, you got to score playoff goals. I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to get Nico Hischier and Jack Hughes to be able to score playoff goals. You can't get Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews to do that, but those guys would be a little bit more amenable.
Can you get Jake Allen to stop playoff goals?
Well, that's another conversation.
I was going to say, Sheldon Keefe might have the same problem he had in Toronto that he has no goaltender, but at the same time, though, we'll have to see what he does there. Out in Seattle, the Kraken promoted Dan Bylsma from their AHL affiliate in Coachella Valley to the big club. He'll start his third NHL coaching tour next season. He is a Stanley Cup winner with Pittsburgh in 2009, but Bylsma comes into Seattle with a 320, 190, 55 record behind the bench. That is a ridiculous... And you were saying before the show, if you take Buffalo out of that, he wins like four of every five games he coaches.
He had a absolutely ridiculous run, and it could have worked in Buffalo if he had the horses that he had when he was coaching in Pittsburgh.
But the thing was that Tim Murray didn't give him a lot of horses to go with.
And not at all.
All the guys he drafted were not ready to come to the NHL at that point, so...
Was Bylsma the one who was promoted mid-season when the Penguins were out of a playoff spot, and then he took them to win the final that year?
That's Mike Sullivan. Bylsma took over and won the first cup.
He took over for what's the French dude that was behind the bench there?
Therrien.
Therrien. Michel Therrien. And then Bylsma came in after that, after he got fired, and basically redid the whole thing. So my question for Bylsma, again, I don't think he's going to have a problem coaching in Seattle. There's a little bit of going to be a disconnect there, because he doesn't have the talent that he did in Pittsburgh. But
better talent than Buffalo.
Better than Buffalo, I'll give you that. Will he bring Jessica Campbell with him as the NHL's first assistant female assistant coach, full-time female assistant coach? I don't know if he will. I kind of hope that he does.
But I kind of
want to see her run Seattle all by herself. I kind of want to see her be in charge of all the talent they have, because they have a ton of good talent down there.
Yeah, they've drafted well to start their franchise, and I think bringing in somebody that isn't part of an old boys club, literally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a figure of speech,
but it's something that Seattle's done very, very well.
Bring somebody who doesn't have the NHL, experience from outside the NHL.
And Seattle's not afraid of that.
I mean,
they're willing to bring in the people that, to your point, are not part of the old boys club and try something different. And the good bonus is that, you know, she, if we say, you know, Bylsma lasts 4 or 5 years as head coach of the Kraken, whatever that looks like, maybe goes six. If she takes over as the head coach of the Coachella Valley Firebirds, she is going to be coaching all of the future Kraken.
Right.
So by the time she gets there.
All the little Kraken.
I think, well, right. I think that's the next progressive step for her, though, in that she gets that good, that base of talent that they're building, gets to work with them for a few years, and all of a sudden, if Bosma either steps aside or gets fired for whatever reason, you have somebody who's worked with all that talent, who knows their ins and outs, who knows their ups and downs. All of a sudden, you've got yourself
similar to Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh, who
brought
his AHL team with him to fill the third and fourth line, and boom, so, they moved up.
Right. So that would be, ideal, I think. And I think Jessica Campbell would be great at that. I think that she'd run a great bench down in Coachella Valley, but we'll have to see what Seattle decides on in terms of getting her out. I know that, again, Dan Bylsma handpicked her out of the coaches association, the coach of the NHL, where they're doing the mentorship or whatever. He handpicked her as his assistant coach. So, I mean, there's a tie there in terms of Bylsma relying on her as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see what goes on with that. But the other big surprise, maybe a little bit of surprise, Don Waddell opts to walk away from the Carolina Hurricanes to take the GM and governor's role in Columbus with the Blue Jackets, in a move that seems, to me, very Columbus-y in its lateral motion.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, Don Waddell, as a manager, I don't believe has a great record, and I'll run through a little bit through. He got his management start with the IHL's Orlando Solar Bears in 1995. He was named as assistant GM to the Detroit Red Wings in 97-98, where they won a cup. He was named the first general manager of the Atlanta Thrashers back in 1998, a position he held until 2010 when he was promoted to team president.
He was almost the only general manager in the history of the Atlanta Thrashers.
Rick Dudley was the other guy. Thrashers went 308, 401, 45, and 66 under his management, and they made the playoffs only once in that entire time, where they were swept by the New York Rangers.
And a young man by the name of Henrik Lundqvist.
Swept as the three seed.
Yeah.
By the number six New York Rangers.
Not the New York Rangers. Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, Henrik, whatever. In 2018, Waddell was named the president and general manager of the Hurricanes, where they went 238, 130, and 44 underneath him, reached the Eastern Conference Final twice. I don't think he's a very good general manager, to be honest. I mean, I know he can run a show, but I don't think he's a very great general manager, and I think Columbus might actually get worse with him in charge there.
I think he runs the business from what it looks like.
You can't say he runs the business well when the Thrashers folded.
It's true. But anybody who looks at what the success that the Carolina Hurricanes have had and don't think that 90% of that is due to a young man named Eric Tulsky,
right?
You are out to lunch. That guy who should just remove the interim tag from him. He's been the GM of that team basically since he was hired.
Yeah.
He's the reason why when the Carolina Hurricanes call you for a trade, you don't pick up, because he will beat you. So I think that for Columbus, the ownership group gets to make a decision that's, you know, very Jets way, the safe choice. You just go for the guy that's been working for a really long time, and you don't have to worry about it. You can just, set it and forget it and go off and do whatever. You don't have to make the hard decision. They swung for the fences with a guy named Jarmo Kekäläinen, who never was a general manager in his career.
Hold on a second, though. This is a team that allowed Bill Zito to walk away.
Yeah.
Bill Zito, who's now running the Florida Panthers,
who are potentially going to go back to the Stanley Cup final.
Like, if this franchise is not able to recognize the talent they have within their own walls, hiring Waddell is only going to make that worse, because, again, I don't see them getting better with him
unless his golden touch is to hire another understudy who takes the team
and takes the credit, that might be the setup. Then he's gonna have to look for whoever's next.
It's
in line.
That, or maybe you see a couple years, a few years. Is there such a thing as a Kansas City Blue Jacket? That doesn't work, right?
Well, we could probably put it in there. We'll make it work.
Well, Columbus just reminds me of those teams in the 70s, that like the Seals and the Barons and the Scouts that just kind of floated around as like.
You those kind of teams. Forget they're
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, they were there. And the Seals used to trade their first overall pick to the Canadians for these veterans.
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, we can make our team better with these guys and give up LeFleur and,
right.
you know.
All these that. Great players.
Hopefully.
That Don was Waddell. Waddell who made those yeah. trades.
Hopefully Don Waddell learned a thing or two from Eric Tulsky about talent evaluation, or else there is going to be a fire sale out of Columbus, and they are going to be losing tons of talent.
There's already word out there that Martin Nečas will become a Blue Jacket by the time the summer's over.
I hope that doesn't happen for him.
I'm just saying.
He needs to go somewhere where the team is actually good.
So from Columbus sort of running themselves into the ground, he's currently another guy that legitimately is under a little bit of, well, I guess under fire. He got hired, but he currently employed in Australia. You might remember this guy, former Bison's men's hockey head coach.
Oh boy, do I remember.
Mike Sarant will break out the passport once again once the AIHL season, once the Australian ice hockey season is over, as he was named the new assistant coach of the EIHL's Glasgow, now it's the Elite Ice Hockey League in England, the Glasgow Clan this week. Mike's tenure at the University of Manitoba saw the Bison's fall in harder times as the years sort of climbed up past from 2004 when he was hired. Twice in his 18 seasons behind the bench, the Bison's hit the 20-win mark, but his final four seasons saw him just add 30 wins to his career total in those 4 years. Not so great. Since moving to a 28-game schedule in 2007-2008, the Bisons have only had 4 seasons where they posted single digits in the losses column, with most seasons seeing the team hover around 500. This summer, Mike joined the Brisbane Lightning down in the Australian Ice Hockey League, who are currently 4-9-1 on the season. In short, Mike's presence hasn't really changed their fortunes whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Glasgow, meanwhile, finished 10-24-9-11 last season in the EIHL. They missed the playoffs by 2 points. They do need some significant help, both in personnel and in structure. I don't know if Mike Sarant makes a difference there.
He will make a difference in that he is a good people person. I'm gonna use his own lines against him. He's a good people person. He's good. He's easy to get along with. He's very respectful.
So he's running the ticket booth then?
Maybe, maybe. Like I you know,
hello,
I have nothing.
Yeah,
I have nothing
exactly.
bad to say about Mike Sarant, the man.
No, Mike is a fantastic individual.
Yeah,
I loved
you know, every time I got to talk to him, it was a fantastic experience. Yeah. He was always open and honest and all of that, which was really great for a young journalist. But he has the issue where he kind of gets stuck in his ways. And he's not the kind of coach that will respond mid-game to something.
Correct.
He won't, like, he might change up some of the lines, and he'll bring out the line blender and tweak things around, but he doesn't respond to what the opposition is doing very well, and that it becomes very clear in, if you look at the performance of the Bisons in all of their series, the second game of every series, they tended to play better and come out to a good start because he got to watch the whole game, get all the tape, figure out, okay, this is what they're doing, okay, I'm going to respond to that. But by the end of the game, it would have fallen apart again.
You can hear me laughing because it's funny that that happened, considering that Canada West makes tape available for every team for every game.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess you could make the case that there's a ton of U Sports, and particularly Can West guys, that are making the exodus over to the UK to play in that league.
You know,
so maybe he can, you know, potentially try and evaluate some talent that's coming across, or potential opportunities to bring players over. And I know who you're about to mention.
you know who their big player is in Glasgow right now? Anyone want to take a shot? Former Penguin. Former Duck. Play defense. Right. No?
No.
Simon Dupre is their player over there. That's their big star.
It was the Canadian World Juniors car.
That is correct.
That's where I know him from. It's so, like Penguins, Sharks. He made the energy up.
The Ducks. Not Sharks. Ducks.
Shark,
he,
ducks.
He, but
ducks,
Simone, Simone, Simone Dupre is the big player over over in Glasgow. So we'll have some more Australian Ice Hockey League updates coming up later in the show here. But we have another coaching change in a move that literally should surprise no one considering its history. Associate coach of the UNB Reds men's hockey program, Rob Henniger, takes over after Gardner McDougall retired from the program. Henniger spent 10 seasons as the associate coach in behind the bench for the Reds. In 2007, Henniger helped UNB win its first national title in 10 years as a player, and UNB has won four national championships, 2016, 2017, 2019, 2023, eight consecutive AUS regular season titles, and six AUS championships with him behind the bench. So you're getting basically Gardner McDougall light.
I was going to say, it's like the succession planning that has gone into that is incredible because nothing is changing. He spent a decade learning how Gardner McDougall ran that program.
And if you consider the playing time that he spent there as well, he's been basically in the system for about 15 years. Yeah,
he knows. And I think that with him taking over, he understands what the value proposition of playing for UNB is. He can make that to potential recruits, and he knows how Gardner McDougall went about things, which was very different than any other program in U Sport.
So if you don't know who Henniger is, and again, people are going to go, like, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. He was named, in all four seasons playing for the Reds, he was named MVP of the team, all four seasons, including his rookie season. He was named the Player of the Year in one of the years. He was signed by the New York Islanders coming out of UNB. He was that good in college hockey, in university hockey here in Canada. They eventually had him down on the farm. They traded him to Carolina. He went over to Germany, played a little bit there. But like, this guy can play, and now he's taken his coach. He's become basically one of the next best coach. Well, assuming he does the same thing, he could be one of the next best coaches in Canada. So it's kind of crazy to see how good he was as a player, and then he moved into coaching and is being coached by one of the best.
That just says hockey sense. Hockey IQ at the top there.
So we'll see how Rob Henniger does, because he comes in with a 47-0 record to continue to try and push on. 47-game winning streak to try and continue on. That is a big number. I'm going to say right now, if he gets to 50... who cares after that? You hit 50 wins in a row. That's ridiculous. Anyway, staying in U Sports, you heard that Howie Draper is returning to the Alberta Pandas after stepping down from PWHL New York. So Howie Draper will be back behind the bench for the Pandas this season. But we do have another announcement as well. Carla McLeod opted to stay with PWHL Ottawa, and that resulted in the Calgary Dinos removing the interim tag from Josh Gosling, making him the official head coach of the Dinos women's hockey program moving forward. Gosling had an okay season last year, made the playoffs with the Dinos, but at the same time, though, really started to change that program and start to putting in some new good players that maybe a lot of people didn't know about. So Gosling, as we heard Carla McLeod say when we had her on last August, is really the talent identifier when Carla was running the program. It was Josh going out and finding all the talent for the team, so this kind of gives him like all the strings to pull now, so we'll see if he can sort of capitalize on that.
Because for people who are not aware, being a head coach in U Sport is a completely different animal. You are general manager, you are head coach, you are essentially president of hockey operations, you are all of that. You're doing everything. So
You're a therapist. You're all helping. You're a teacher on the road. You're all that kind of stuff. So
and in the classroom, for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part.
So I think it's a no brainer move. Honestly,
I like it. I have no problem with it. Josh Gosling ran the show last year. I'm sure he'll do fine this year as well. ECHL's got a bunch of U Sports players that are playing it. The Kelly Cup final is set, though. The two-time defending champion Florida Everblades are back looking for a three-peat. They'll run into the Kansas City Mavericks. Talk a little bit about these two teams in a second, but their series starts tomorrow in Kansas City. Again, we'll be watching a handful of players. Kansas City features David Noel from UQTR, so one of the past national champions. He played with UQTR from 21 to 24. Their reserve list is ridiculous. They have Jacob Brahaney from Queens, Justin McPherson from St. Mary's University, and Bradley Schoenbart from Brandon, who played for the Calgary Dinos, on their bench, basically waiting to come off. Like they're up in the press box watching. And Schoenbart was ridiculous for the Dinos, so you can tell how good this Mavericks team is just based upon who they got sitting right now.
Yeah, it's wild.
Florida comes in with Kyle Neuber, who played for Guelph from 2013-2016. Jordan Sambrook, who played with Brock from 2019-2020. And then Evan Cormier is their reserve. He played with Guelph in 2018-2019. Here's why this is going to be a bit of a juggernaut versus David versus Goliath kind of setup. The Mavericks came into the playoffs as the first overall team in the ECHL this season after putting up 54 wins and 114 points. They've lost just three games over the first three rounds. They swept through the first, they lost one in the second, they lost two in the third. They look like a juggernaut. Like, they go out every game and they just pound the net with pucks. They throw bodies all over the place. They're going to be a tough out for anybody. Now that they're in the final, it'll be tough out for Florida if that's the case. Florida, though, has all the experience. They've been here twice before, obviously, having won in the previous 2 years. They know what it takes to win. Neuber, who we mentioned, is looking for a third straight Kelly Cup with the Everblades as well, the only player on the roster that from U Sports, that has U Sports experience anyway, that's going to have that option. He won, obviously, in the last 2 years, so there will be at least some U Sports players that are going to be crowned as ECHL champions this season. We'll have to see which side ends up as the winner, but series starts tomorrow, so yeah, there we go.
It'll be a good one.
Yeah, it should be good. As we were saying, there was a couple players prior to... see if I can find it here. I had it as well. Toledo is who Kansas City beat. Toledo had Riley Sawchuk, Jason Wilms, and Brady Gilmore all playing for them. Mm-hmm. Wilms and Gilmore could have finished their season had they advanced. Could have finished their season with a U Cup and a Kelly Cup had they advanced, but didn't happen, unfortunately. So yeah, and then the other team that was in there as well, Adirondack Thunder was the other team that got bumped out by Florida. Adirondack finished first place in the North Division. They had Jackson Venn. I don't know if you knew Jackson Vandalese from Dalhousie. Dude is 6'7".
Oh my god.
Plays defense. 6'7". And Darren Skiach, who he's been all over the Darian Skiach has been all over the place. He played in Carleton University 2018-2020. Mm-hmm. Skiach had 150 penalty minutes in 41 games this year. Dude is grit and nails out there.
Yeah.
So Adirondack unfortunately got beat by Florida though, so there we go. One last note in terms of players moving to new homes. Former Calgary Dino standout Matt Alfaro. He'll head to the EIHL next season. Going to be playing against Mike Sorant as he's inked to deal with the Nottingham Panthers for the 24-25 season. Mm-hmm. Alfaro last played in Germany's second division last season with Ravensburg Tower Stars. After skating with Wheeling in the ECHL and all of Wilkes-Barre Scranton, the Manitoba Moose and the Abbotsford Canucks since 2020. So Alfaro jump into the EIHL next season where he'll probably see a lot of faces he knows.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of guys there.
A lot of guys there. One last note from U Sports. 45 U Sports players have declared their intentions for the PWHL draft coming up on June 10th. Most notably, Jesse Jack and Milo Verbicki from McEwen, Sophie Lawler, Kenzie Losberg, Cameron Drever, and Isabella Posey from Saskatchewan, Cassidy Maplethorpe and Hallie Oswald from Alberta, Emma Bergeson from MRU from Mount Royal, and Rylan McKinnon from UBC are all on the list from Canada West.
There's some names I could see getting drafted.
45 spots is all they have for there's a lot of good players that are coming through this year. There's also a pile of other names, obviously, and some notable names, including players that were at Nationals this year, include Emmy Fecto from Concordia, Leah Herfort from Waterloo, Taylor Trussler from Toronto, Kellyanne Nadeau from Montreal, and the always dangerous Kendra Woodland in net for UNB. She can steal games in a heartbeat, so a lot of good players that are coming in through U Sports to try and get into the PWHL, but again, only 45 draft spots available, so it'll be interesting to see who goes where this year, but we'll have to see. Jumping overseas again, the IIHF World Championships were held in Prague and Ostrava. The Czechs captured gold. Congratulations to them. Swiss were silver medalists. Swedes beat Canada to earn the bronze. And again, I don't have a problem with Canada losing. Again, it's a crapshoot on who you're going to have available to play for you every year because of the NHL playoffs. But my question is this. The goaltending was rather disappointing, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Are we really going to rely on Jordan Binnington as Canada's best option for the 2026 Olympics?
Well, we have 2 years to hope that Devon Levi becomes what everyone expects him to be, or you're hoping that Aiden Hill doesn't turn into a pumpkin over the next 2 years, or
Don't forget Hofer.
Joel Hofer is another option. You hope that he, you know, kind of succeeds his teammate in Jordan Binnington to become the number one option in both St. Louis and with Team Canada. Because if Marc-Andre Fleury is retiring after this year, you basically have no option you can hang your hat on that's better than anybody else. Like, Jordan Binnington, I'm assuming, got the nod because he has a Stanley Cup and he's played for Canada before and nothing else.
I didn't notice. Who was the backup?
So Alex Lyon started. He got injured. Alex Lyon, who played for Detroit this season. Yep. And then Joel Hofer was his replacement. So St. Louis all the way. Yeah. But
but you picked the wrong St. Louis goalie to be the guy.
But honestly, I mean, we were talking about this before. I mean, outside of Laurent Brossoit, I mean, there hasn't been any other Canadians that have really stood out in the NHL goaltending circuit at this point.
But
we were talking Ingram. Maybe.
Right. Yeah.
He's got to show a little bit. Maybe he's got to show that on a better team or different team.
Again, Utah's going to be interesting this season because they have $40 million in cap space to play with.
That's very true.
So they could have a better team.
And I think, but this is a problem. This is a train we have seen coming down the tracks for over a decade. It basically, since the early 2010s, we've known that the goaltending pipeline in Canada is broken.
We were blinded by it because Price and Fleury were still
exactly.
there.
We had such great talent because you basically went from the era of Brodeur, Waugh, Cujo, and then you
Luongo,
and then you go into Price and Fleury, and basically from that point, we had nothing because all of that stuff, all of the talent, because. You know, when did Carey Price play for Team Canada, right? It was right around the lockout, and basically since then...
Well, he was in for So they had 2010 was Brodeur Luongo.
Yeah.
2014 was...
Price.
And then it's been Price ever since.
Yeah.
Price with Fleury, Price with Brodeur, Price with Luongo, but Price has been your guy.
Yeah.
And legitimately,
but you look down to the
10 years later, we haven't developed any goaltending.
Yeah, because you look at the World Juniors, and sure, guys that have gone to the World Juniors are the goalies of note now. You know, you've got Joel Hofer being one of them, and he who will not be named on this show was True. Another one
yeah.
of them.
Yeah,
but you've got Jordan Binnington being another name. Basically, since the days of Justin Pogge, we've known that there's a problem here, and we're not making it easy for people to be goaltenders in Canada. It's incredibly expensive. We don't have good enough training like the other countries have put tons. Like, why not look at what Finland's doing? Finland, who consistently turns out fantastic goaltender.
Okay, so,
look at what Latvia is
okay,
doing.
Okay, so hold on. So here are the goalies who have played for Canada, and I'll just name off a couple that have had some pretty exceptional seasons, not in the NHL. Thomas Milic is one of them. Mm-hmm. Plays for the Moose, obviously. Sebastian Kosa, who's playing for Grand Rapids right now. Brett Brochu, who, I mean, we've seen him go up and down, no big deal or whatever. Devin Levi is in there in terms of what he's got. Nico Dawes from New Jersey, who hasn't got a lot of time to play because he was injured. Joel Hofer was in there, as you said. Michael DiPietro.
I think his time is past.
But Connor Ingram in 1997 is your youngest guy who's got any sort of NHL experience. Mackenzie Blackwood was in there in 96. Eric Comrie was in there at 95. Zach Fucali in 95. We're already out of our element at this point.
Yep.
Isn't Zach Fucali playing somewhere in the E-League in Britain
or
something?
He's somewhere else.
He's disappeared.
But we're already talking, like Jordan Binnington was a 1993 goaltender, and we're talking like him being like, you know, like 30, like he's in his 30s now.
Yep.
And legitimately, Connor Ingram at 97 is your only 20-year-old who's got any NHL experience of any kind at this point.
Like... It's difficult, right? Because you're basically hoping that the lineup of Joel Hofer and Devin Levi will be the second coming of Waugh Brodeur.
Or,
and
you know, there's always the Hill and Thompson. They're Stanley Cup.
Again, you can get by with those guys. I'm not saying that you can't get by with them, but
because Canada's going to be absolutely stacked up front.
But again,
at the same time, the other countries are going to be stacked, especially at the final.
But you look at the American goaltending. They have four guys right now you could take, and not one of them would be a bad starter. Yeah. Like, they have so much talent that's coming out of America at that point. You kind of go, how come we don't have that?
But is that talent coming out of the U.S. Collegiate system or the U.S. under...
Connor Hellebuck certainly did.
So where is the problem? The Canadian Junior Hockey League is not...
I think that is...
Maturing and fostering the goaltending culture. Like
exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Because that's the thing that we've been talking about since the 2010s, that because of the way that goaltending works in the Canadian Hockey League, where most of the goaltenders that we have used come from, is not a conducive environment for building good goaltenders.
See, I disagree with that. I think that the options that we provide for goaltending are always good, but we take weird names all the time to the juniors. And I'll say that only because Dom whatever his name is from
DeVincentis.
Yeah, DeVincentis. Yeah. Dude was one of the best goaltenders again in the O this year and didn't even get a sniff at the World Juniors. And you go, how is it that the best goaltenders aren't going to the World Juniors all the time?
That's possibly the coaching, the way that it's like, right. I want to coach with a particular type of goaltending, and then that brings them down a level.
Right, so as they get bumped down their draft status now, they're not getting the same opportunities as a Carey Price, as a Sebastian Casa, as a Devon Levi.
Because the World Juniors does matter when it comes to scouts, because lots of NHL scouts, I'm going to say it, are lazy and do not do their due diligence when it comes to goaltenders, because goaltenders are voodoo. So they just rely on who goes to the World Juniors, who performs well at the World Juniors. Usually that's a Canadian goaltender, and they say, okay, that guy, he's a top 60 pick, instead of saying, you know, the guy that's, you know, tearing it up.
Do you recall Ian Scott?
Oh, the Toronto Maple Leafs put a lot of stock behind Ian Scott being their next big goaltender.
Came from Prince Albert, round 4, 110th overall, went to Toronto Marlies, went to the Wichita Thunder, went to the Newfoundland Growlers. It was out of hockey in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we burn guys out so fast because we expect so much from them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't expect... Again, I understand that some of these goalies are going to stick with it. Like, there's not going to be a quick push from some of these teams.
Or is it the system, the Canadian Hockey League system, where it's like...
Well, it's a little bit of everything, right? Like, it's factors all over the place, and you go, one of those is going to kill these guys.
Wash their mouth out with that rubber, and then it's like, get to the NHL, so what happened?
So, well, I mean, so we're at Jordan Binnington right now is our best option in terms of the most played games.
So we're going to be very happy with our fifth place finish at the Olympics. It's going to be great. Fifth.
I mean, the Swiss could probably beat us at this point. Like, we're lucky if we get to fifth. Yeah. Couple more things that are going through here. According to interviews and research done by The Athletic's Chris Johnson at the World Championship, European nations have expressed, quote, heavy support for the IIHF's ban of Russia and Belarus, unquote. Gord Miller also jumped on that, pointing out on Twitter that, quote, the Russian Ice Hockey Federation is an arm of the Russian government. Allowing the RIHF to share in broadcast and sponsorship revenue would be indirectly funding the Russian regime, unquote. So don't expect that ban to end anytime soon.
I'm going to say it again. Sports is used by nations as propaganda.
Correct. Another
I
big
seem to remember something in 1972 that.
There was a little.
And then in 1980 too, wasn't there something?
Wasn't there that whole thing where the Russian military paid the salary? Why they were the Russian Red Army team was because they couldn't be professionals,
right.
They were soldiers that just, you know, their military service was them practicing and training single day together.
They couldn't be professionals because gold medals mattered more than championships did, so they didn't let them go and play in the professional league. Yep. That was part of the whole thing. One man's legendary status in Czechia is never going to be questioned. Jaromir Jagr's career always seems to be asked, are you going to play again? What are you doing next year, Jagr? On Saturday, the 51-year-old hopped onto Facebook and answered the question by saying, quote, another hockey season has begun. I just read that I played Extraliga for Kladno for the first time 35 years ago. It's been a minute, but the nervousness, the anticipation before the start, this is still the same, unquote. Basically, Jagr's coming back to play for Kladno next season to help them, again, both avoid relegation to the second-tier Czechia League and probably to avoid bankruptcy again.
I saw a report that the Penguins were trying to get him into a front office role. It's,
they did want him to sort of join some sort of, in some way, because again, they want to honor him or whatever, mm-hmm. but he's got no interest.
He just wants to keep playing hockey.
I want to play hockey, and not only that, but his lifestyle in Czechia is pretty nice. Like, drives the finest cars, has mm-hmm. everybody looking out for him. Like, that's not a bad life to have.
Yeah, he's that dude. And if you saw any of the celebrations when the Czech team went back with that gold medal, they adore
that hockey. Trophy is already broken, by the way.
That does not surprise
they
me.
They had it at some beer garden somewhere in Prague, and the whole top moves now, so not surprising.
Let them keep it. It's fine.
The 104th Memorial Cup, as we jump back to Canada, is nearly done. I should note that the QMJHL's Drummondville Voltigeurs were eliminated 2 days ago. They went 0-3 at the tournament. Saginaw, Michigan is where it's being held. As Saginaw Spirit are the host. At least three teams to determine who will be Canadian junior hockey's best squad this season. Semifinal goes tomorrow night. Features the WHL's Moose Jaw Warriors against the host. That beat again the OHL Saginaw Spirit. The winner will advance to the final on Sunday where they will face the OHL champion London Knights, who are awaiting as they were perfect in the round robin. Games for the tournament can be seen on TSN. To be honest, I don't really care who wins this one because I'm pretty sure London is already stacked and ready to go.
I thought they already won.
Yeah.
They kind of did, but they kind of didn't.
I cannot wait for this tournament to be over so we stop hearing about Easton Cowan every 30 seconds.
Please and thank you.
He's a Maple Leafs prospect.
Speaking of champions, PWHL handed out the Walter Cup last night, and a huge congratulations goes to PWHL Minnesota as the state of hockey owns the first ever championship. Ooh. Liz Sheppers, former Thunder Bay Queens forward Michaela Cava, and Kendall Coyne Schofield into an empty net was all the scoring Minnesota needed, as Nicole Hensley stopped all 17 shots that were sent her way for the 3-0 win in Game 5 of the best-of-five series against PWHL Boston. Minnesota forward and first overall pick in last year's draft, Taylor Heise, was named the Alana Claus Playoff MVP, which only furthers my hatred of everything that's named for anything in the PWHL. The Walter Cup and this playoff MVP garbage needs to end. You can't stand on the shoulders of giants and call yourself tall.
Yeah, don't name the trophies after yourselves. Maybe name them.
Self-congratulation doesn't work well in professional sports.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, you have so many fantastic women who literally laid the road before you that you could walk along.
No.
Like, you're not going to name a trophy after Haley Wickenheiser?
No.
I was reading the...
Cami Granato?
I was reading about how it was like, oh, they won the Walter Cup. I was like, Walter Cup? Oh, that must be the last name of some female I'd never heard of. Nope. Mark Walter.
The owner the owner and fund of the guy funding the league is the guy who gets his name on the trophy.
As they name their championship trophy as a thank you for your donation.
Like, I appreciate the fact that he's done this and he's put the league together, but you don't get to name the trophy after yourself. That's just absolute, that's narcissism at its best.
Name an award after the guy. But
the President's Trophy, give them the best regular season team, the Walter Cup or the Walter Trophy as the best regular season team. That would make sense.
Exactly. Don't name your championship trophy
anyway
after him. And don't name...
I have one question. I wasn't following as closely as maybe you guys were. But so Toronto picked Minnesota to face in the first
year? So the rules were is that whoever finished first had the option to pick whoever they wanted to play, and Minnesota came into the final basically like playing like terrible hockey.
Yeah.
And then a couple of injuries later, and they stormed back from a 2-0 deficit to win 3-2 and then win the whole damn thing. So
pretty awesome. I'm not sure about that rule, about getting to pick the team. That just seems to add... I wouldn't want to pick a team. But
it's
going to
be interesting.
But it raises the stakes a little bit. Yeah. I like the idea of raising the stakes a little bit, though.
Because that's the thing is Minnesota,
if you don't
Toronto
be,
said, we want to play you because we think we can beat you. And then they beat them and go on to win the championship. The most Toronto thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, it's legitimately like the curse of Toronto hockey at this point.
It's going to be really interesting when the league gets larger and there's more. Like the Golden Plan thing,
right?
It's really going to shine when this league is much larger and there's some variation and there's going to be some distinct, because it was basically you had two choices really when it came down to it, and they picked the team that was in fourth,
right?
Not the team that was in third.
Rather than playing Boston, they picked Minnesota. Yeah,
because then you'd just be playing with fire at that point if you picked Boston.
So, well, yeah, I mean that would have been bad, but whatever. So congratulations to Minnesota on winning the first championship. PWHL draft will happen June 10th at 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern at the legendary Roy Wilkins Auditorium in St. Paul, Minnesota, where the next PWHL stars will be drafted that night. Make sure you're watching social media for all the details on how you can watch. Also want to throw this out a little bit as well. A huge respect goes out, and all the props in the world go out to Kenzie Lalone, Cheryl Pounder, Daniela Ponticelli, and Becky Keller for being the voices of the PWHL on TSN. I don't care what anybody says, men's, women's hockey, doesn't matter what it is, these four can be the voice of hockey any day. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed their coverage this season, so good for them. Already looking for season two with those guys behind the mics again, those pros behind the mics. Here's some news that everybody may appreciate, though. At the ESPNW Summit, Amy Shear, the Senior Vice President of Business Operations of the PWHL, confirmed that team names will be announced in August, before next season starts. So let's just
hope it'll be names and eventually logos, or just names first, the logos will be the following year?
Who knows at this point? At least they're getting names, though, and let's just hope that they're better than Echo and Breeze or any of those other dumb names they proposed at the beginning of the season. Like, that was ridiculous, but whatever. In other naming news, Utah NHL team owner Ryan Smith dropped by the ESPN's Pat McAfee show on Wednesday, and he revealed that both Mammoth and Yeti are among the top names for Utah's NHL franchise. No word on the Outlaws yet, which you like, Jason, but
still holding out.
But there's still a chance.
They can't be Yeti. I'll just think of a coffee cup every single time. I'm like, oh, there they go. Oh, the coffee cups. They're coming to town.
There's already a Stanley Cup. Coffee, we can have the Yetis in there. There you go.
The mug or cup. I don't know what it is, but it's like Yeti? No, nope.
Did you guys do the survey? Because I did the survey.
I did the survey, yeah.
Oh, which one did you pick? Obviously, you picked Yeti because it's your number one name.
No, it was because they asked for four of them, wasn't there?
Yeah, you had to pick four.
So I had Yeti. I did pick Outlaws. I thought Outlaws fit in there. I think it was on the same page as you, because I think I picked Swarm as well. I thought that was kind of cool with the idea of the whole imagery that you could have, because it's the Beehive State, right? Yeah. Like, that's the whole thing. So you could go crazy with all that kind of stuff.
And but I think there's outside of their Capitol building, there's a statue of a beehive.
Yeah.
But you name the team the Swarm, and the nickname for the arena is the Hive.
Like, it would be fantastic. So
yeah,
I like Mammoth. I think that's still my leader.
The former lacrosse team was named the Mammoth there, though. Oh no, Colorado.
Mammoth. So next door.
Yeah, next door. Yeah. So
that's we'll have to see fine. How that goes,
you know. And the other AIHL news that we promised: Melbourne Mustangs are struggling out of the gates this season. They're 5-6-1 with 17 points. They're 10 back of the Perth Thunder, 19 back of the Sydney Bears, who lead the division. They did bring in Canadian goalie trying to shore things up. It wasn't Liam Hughes, unfortunately. Instead, WHLer and Acadia Axeman netminder Logan Flodell joined the club. He's 2-2 so far, 226 goals against average, 937 save percentage. Mustangs got to start scoring some goals. In other Canadian goalies in Australia news, former UBC Thunderbird Rylan Toth signed with the Adelaide Adrenaline. Things aren't going well there, though. Adelaide is 1-7-3 in the season. They're last place in the Rurik division. They are just 8 points back of Brisbane, who are second place. But Toth is 0-4-2 in seven games with 337 goals against average and an 896 save percentage. The reason for that, outside of their three imports who have 16 goals between them, the rest of the team has scored just 8 times. Not good. Finally, some local news for those that were waiting last week for it, and we didn't get to it because we ran out of time. But sledge hockey community was busy in Manitoba recently. The provincial Manitoba para hockey team competed in the 2024 National Para Hockey Championships from May 16th to May 19th in Colborne, Ontario. Manitoba battled hard but fell in overtime to New Brunswick in the B Pool gold medal game that saw the game won by the Maritimer, with 1.8 seconds remaining in the extra frame. So it would have been a good final there. Had they not scored, it would have gone to a shootout, but that's neither here nor there at that point. Manitoba did take a younger squad. They chose younger players to go out there to make sure that they had some more experience at the national level. It seems to have paid off as they competed hard and certainly almost won the gold medal in the B pool. It was the first tournament under new provincial head coach McKenna Wild. She looks to make her mark in para hockey. The former Eastman Selects and Central Plains Capitals netminder spent some time in the ACAC with Nate before playing in the MWJHL with the Grey Owls and the Polar Ice. The 25-year-old does have some experience playing high-level hockey, so should be good with her running the show there for the provincial team now. The A-Pool gold medal game saw Quebec beat Ontario by a 1-0 score. Team Canada para hockey netminder Corbin Watson was the goalie for Ontario, so Quebec with a big win against one of Canada's best players. And Manitoba's already gearing up for next year's tournament. It's going to be held in Moncton, New Brunswick. I'm going to say stay tuned for a chat with Sledge Hockey Manitoba members again this summer. We're going to have them on. We're going to get caught up with everything they're doing. It's going to be another great chat with them as we get to meet some more players, and hopefully McKenna Wild will come on with them, and we'll meet the new coach as well. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Jay, we squeezed everything in the hour tonight.
Yeah, we did.
Everything in that we needed to squeeze in. We got about 30 seconds to go here before we let Skippy get in here with Free Range Radio. Always glad to have you on here, Skippy. Thanks for doing this tonight.
Thanks for having me in.
Anything you want to say, Jay, before we get out of here?
I'm going to be on a panel next week. I'm going to be on the Talking Climate panel. It'll be myself and a few other authors discussing climate change and how we write about climate change, as the four of us have all written books and poetry with climate change themes in them. So that is 7 o'clock Central Time, so Winnipeg time, on June 5th, and it will be online, an online panel. People can tune in and listen.
Where's it online? The YouTube?
There's a registration. I think it's a Zoom thing.
Okay.
You look at the Great Plains Publishing Instagram and Twitter, and you will find the link there for the registration.
That'll work for me in terms of getting you going. We're out of here for another week, folks. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. As always, we're happy to bring you all the hockey news we can every week. We'll see you next week on Thursday, everybody. Have a good one, and watch some hockey this weekend.
You're still here? It's over. Go home.
Actually, don't go anywhere. You're listening to 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg.